Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Sweet Man Poop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fans is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners.
You guys act like this.
Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be beaten.
Don't get no more realer.
All right. Welcome to the RSG Boxing Special. It's a big weekend coming up, and I had to connect. You know, we had to connect with one of our gurus of boxing, Teron Big Briggs, coming here on us. And Teron, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. D, how's everything going with you, brother?
Well, man, it's going well, man. And I'm following Twitter and going back and forth, and it was good that we were able to connect and say, let's get together and talk about this. We just came off a big boxing weekend. We're about to enter another big boxing weekend. We're moving towards the end of the year, and this is what things just get hyped up on, boxers of the year, fight of the year type of thing. So, you know, this is one of the better kind of runs of a boxing weekend I've probably experienced in a long time. So it's good to have you on, but I want the people to know where they can catch you. And so let's start with that. Where can people find you?
Actually, they can find me in Brooklyn.
That's right.
The home of the Barclays Center, one of the recent it's one of the biggest hotbeds in the sport of boxing right now because of the Barclays and all the fights that are there. But mainly, they can find me at boxing.com, where I've been a staff writer for a little over 2 years now, and I do a very popular weekly column called The Week That Was that recaps all of the boxing action from around the globe, every Monday that runs, and then I do different pieces, columns and articles from time to time on different fights, all on boxing.com as well as examiner.com is another site that I'm a contributor to.
And how can I get you up on Twitter? Because you are on Twitter doing it all.
Oh yeah, definitely. Follow me on Twitter at Teron Briggs. I've got certainly plenty to say about the sport of boxing, but I've got a lot to say about pop culture and baseball and football and basketball, you name it. I'm a pretty opinionated guy, so if you follow me, you'll get a lot about the sport of boxing, but you'll get a lot of other stuff as well.
I'm telling you, he's a must-follow, so y'all make sure y'all catch him in that Twitter world. We're trying to We're trying to take that over on the RSC. We're working on it, trying to step our game up. But this is a person you definitely need to follow. So you were there, ringside, as part of the whole HBO package. Walk us through the night and the fights, and just your observation of that night before we slide over to the Barclays Center, where I had my eyes, at least from a television standpoint, watching the Showtime stuff. But let's start. Let's walk what you witnessed in on the HBO special.
Exactly. So yeah, I got the honor to cover the HBO Boxing at the Dark card that was held down in the Atlantic City at the Boardwalk Hall, the ballroom there. I drove down this past weekend, and the it's crazy because you know, sometimes it happens where usually the main event is supposed to be the fight with the marquee fighters, the fight
that's
right. Usually everyone looks forward to when they go to see a card, unless it's a family member or something who's coming to see one of the co-main events or one of the undercard fights. But this was a rare occasion where the co-main event or the undercard fight actually stole the thunder of the main event. Actually, even before the actual fights took place, it was the fight that was most looked forward to, and that was the fight between James Kirkland and Glenn Tapia, which turned out to not only be the best fight on that HBO card, but it was the best fight of the night and probably will get consideration as one of the best fights of the year. And that was an awesome fight. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, D. Did you check it out?
Yeah. I take that, and so I'm actually going to be breaking that down and watching it because I was
okay.
Watching the Showtime card. But I love James Kirkland and the fact that he's been reunited with his old manager. So I was wondering how that was going to impact him as a fighter, because that's when he had his best run, and Tapia's got all heart. So.
Well, James Kirkland is a guy who's been on the scene for the last 3 or 4 years. He's gotten a lot of publicity because he's a boxer who loves to brawl. He's been in a really good fight with Alfredo Angulo 2 years ago, I think it is now, that there was a barn burner. They literally threw caution to the wind and fought for, like, I think it was 5 rounds of some of the most intense action you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Kirkland, James has been away. He was actually away from the sport for about 14 months. He had some issues with the law and promotional issues. That he has now cleared up, and you touched on it a bit. He not only is he back with his trainer Ann Wolf, who many people have seen before because she's been HBO has spotlighted her. She trained him again for this fight, but he also is now being promoted by 50 Cent, the hip hop artist, 50 Cent the rapper. I think most people probably know who 50 is by now, but he has been in the sport for the last year or two. And Kirkland is by far his most well-known fighter that he promotes, and so this was his first fight fighting underneath SMS, which is 50 Cent's promotional promotional banner. This was his first fight, James, with 50. So that was pretty monumental, and in that regard, that certainly will help him get additional publicity outside of just the boxing world because of 50 Cent's reach and the fact that he is so well known.
Well, I mean, when you think about they talked about the brutality of that fight. What for you made it a fight of the year candidate?
Well, for me, I would not call it my fight of the year just because it was a little too one-sided. Usually in fights of the year, I like it to be a very competitive matchup. And for the first two, maybe three rounds of this fight, it was competitive.
Yeah.
I think all three judges in the for the fight had Glenn Tapia, who was the nicknamed the Jersey Boy. He was the he was the guy who had the crowd behind him. I mean, that's one thing that made it such a great atmosphere and such a great fight was because even though it was a small arena, the ballroom at the Boardwalk probably sits about 2,500 people or so. 90% of those people were supporting Glenn Tapia, the undefeated junior middleweight who was challenging James Kirkland, the more established star. So Tapia's people were loud. I mean, if you know Jersey people, you know they can get loud. And they were getting loud for their boy Tapia. They were, you know, cheering like crazy. They really believed that he was going to that he had a chance to win. And he certainly did, because he has a big punch. And in the first round, he came out and he rocked James a couple times with some really good shots. He looked very composed. He's a guy who hadn't previously fought on HBO before. He's been featured on, like, ESPN and a bunch of other smaller networks. But this was his first time really in the spotlight. And he got off to a really good start. He looked composed in there. But James Kirkland is a beast. And anyone who has seen his fights knows that, especially for this weight class. I mean, he fights at junior middleweight, 154 pounds. He throws a ton of punches for a 154-pound fighter. I mean, that's the same class that that Floyd is in. And on average, fighters throw between 50 to 60 punches a round. James Kirkland, in this fight and in a lot of the fights that he's been in, he'll throw in excess of 100 punches a round. I mean, he's like a buzzsaw, and he was that way Saturday night. He was just relentless, and he weathered the storm early from Glenn Tapia. The Jersey boy looked very strong, like I said, early on. And then over the course of the next five rounds, after the first, Kirkland just brutally beat him down. It was pretty gruesome to watch. I just got an opportunity to watch it on television after having seen it live. And, you know, when you're live, a lot of times you don't realize just how, you know, you're not able to see the fighters' faces close up and stuff. So you don't see the expressions, and you know, a lot of times get a chance to see just how badly bruised or beaten they were. That was a very vicious fight. But I mean, I loved it. The fans there, you know, even though they were all very upset, the fight was stopped by TKO. It was a TKO stoppage. Kirkland just overwhelmed Tapia, and eventually the referee, the veteran referee, Steve Smoger, had to get in and stop the fight.
So when you look at the other fights in that card, what's the stuff that stepped up and made you beyond that fight, beyond the Kirkland fight?
I'm sorry, can you please repeat that?
Where were some of the other fights in the card that people should pay attention? Were there anyone that you felt like, a lot of times, especially with Boxing After Dark, are there some people that you feel like are on their way up that we should be paying attention to?
Exactly. I mean, like I said, the main event featured Guillermo Rigondeaux, former Cuban amateur, multiple two-time gold medal winner. He's also, I think, he's most known to boxing fans for his unanimous win earlier this year over former champion Nonito Donaire. He whitewashed him. They fought at the Radio City Music Hall, and Rigondeaux Donaire, who was a big favorite, and you know, who's a very well known fighter, and Rigondeaux basically did the same thing this past weekend. He went the full 12 rounds with a former champion, Joseph Ebeko, a fighter originally from Ghana, who now fights out of the Bronx, who is a capable, you know, he's a little older. For the smaller weight classes, he's like 33 years old. But he's a tough guy. And Rigondeaux, once again, he schooled another fighter. In my weekly column, I said that he did he basically pitched to Sandy Koufax. He was perfect. I mean, all three of the judges scored the fight the same. They gave him every single round of it. It got a little repetitive. It got a little boring. So it's not necessarily the fight that you want to tell when you get a chance to watch the rebroadcast or when you get a chance to watch, I know you said you DVR'd it, you might end up fast forwarding through that through the main event, because it was kind of repetitive just because it was so one sided. But Rigondeaux is someone to watch. He's undefeated, and he is technically, other than Floyd Mayweather, he might be the most technically skilled fighter in the sport. The hardest thing for Top Rank, his promoter, is going to be to be able to find him fighters that can be competitive with him, because he's just that good.
And I mean, and you almost had the same, I mean, it's the Cuban fires. If you think about Lara against Trout, and I'm still trying to figure out Trout's strategy with, you know, it would have been a boring fight because they're both counterpunchers, but it seems like, you know, Cuban fighters are, you know, they're technically sound, but, you know, between Lara had a, you know, I think the late round knockdown trout was, you know, exciting. But it just feels like up until that point, I guess that fight was more Styles, but, you know, the ability to promote, particularly Rigondeaux, I mean, how are you leveraging that? I mean, they're technically sound, but they don't let it take chances. They don't look like they do some of the things that could bring you that mega fight.
Exactly. Very, very valid points. They don't. I mean, they don't take chances. And listen, and you certainly can't be upset with them for not taking chances, because the more offensive you are in a fighter, the more you open yourself up to, you know, to try to take out your opponent, the more you're going to make yourself, the easier you're going to be to hit. So I certainly understand why Rigondeaux is, why he is hesitant to, you know, he's not going to put his chin out there for someone to hit him, and no one can currently fault him for that. The hardest thing is just going to be to match him with fighters who sort of have the complete opposite style from him. The last thing anyone wants to see is Rigondeaux fight a fighter who is very technically skilled and, you know, and very safety first like him, because you end up getting a horrible matchup, kind of like what happened with the Trout Laura fight. You got two guys who are counter punchers by nature. The Laura Trout fight, of course, was on the Barclays Showtime card. But you get two guys who think the same in the ring, and you end up getting a horrible fight, unless you get two guys who are both brawlers, like the Tapia Kirkland fight. So that's what Top Rank is going to have to do for Rigondeaux. They're going to have to match him very carefully, match him with guys who are sort of come forward types, who he's going to be able to exploit, and who's going to give him some, he's going to be able to hit, you know, basically.
On that card, Porter against Devin Alexander, this young kid, he brought hard, he got physical. He puts Alexander around, beat him up. But he's got some skills and some power. Is it Sean Porter, is it? I want to make sure.
Exactly, Sean Porter, yeah. out of Akron, Ohio. He's a Midwest guy, so I'm sure you must got a little love for him because of that.
Yeah, that boy can fight.
He can, man. He really can. You know, he's another guy. He's 26 years old. He had a standout amateur career, won a ton of fights. And then since he's been a professional, he's been moved very slow. I mean, this was just his 23rd fight when he just beat Devin Alexander and took his IBF welterweight title. But before Alexander, he was moved very slow. A lot of people in and around the sport felt like, you know, a kid who had the kind of amateur pedigree that he had, they wanted to see him move quicker. They wanted to see him in a ring with tougher guys. And it just, you know, for whatever reason, his people just didn't. But when he finally was put in the spotlight and put in against a dangerous, tough, you know, world-class opponent like Devon Alexander, he shined. I mean, he physically – and he said it. He said it before the fight, Porter. He said that he felt like he was the bigger man. He was a stronger man. And you saw that in there. He physically manhandled the champ and just outthought him and brutalized him in a lot of ways in taking that fight. The judges' scorecards were pretty close, but I had Porter winning by quite a few rounds. I thought he won that decidedly.
Yeah, I had a 119-109. The Binka Durrell fight. I mean, I had Durrell winning 115-111. I just felt like Binka, this cat, you talk about any means necessary. He epitomizes. He going to headbutt you. He going to hit you low. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that fight, but it was, I mean, it was, they were going at each other, you know, and hitting low. And then, you know, Durrell basically walked out of the ring after the draw was announced. But, you know, I don't know if you had a chance to watch it, but it was a crazy, crazy fight. And I was trying to figure out, you know, if either one of these guys' arrows going up. I didn't come walk away and feel like either one of them had an arrow that was going up.
After that, yeah. I mean, that was a good – I did get a chance to watch that. That was a super middleweight fight. It was for Bika's WBC title, which he ended up retaining because the fight was called a draw. Much like you, I didn't do a scorecard, but I did think that Durrell did enough to win. Durrell is – this was his – his first loss as a professional. He's a guy out of Flint, Michigan, who's really most known to fight fans because his brother Andre Durrell is a former world title holder and has been in the spotlight for the last few years. He was featured in the Showtime Super 6 that they had a few years ago. But Anthony Durrell, to me, actually, because this was much like Sean Porter, this was Anthony Durrell's first really good, really tough fight. He was 26-0 before this fight, but he had never really fought anyone good. So even though he had compiled a very good record, a lot of people didn't know just how good of a fighter he was. And I thought he equipped himself pretty well. Like I said, I just like you, I had him winning. The fight was at times, it was very rough. There was a point deduction late in the fight against Bika. Not only was he accused of hitting low, but it also, it looked like a couple times he tried to use a forearm. I mean, things got towards the end of that fight. That was like a Brooklyn back alley fist fight there.
It was a properly housed in the Barclay in Brooklyn. It was Brooklyn all the way in that. The marquee fight, obviously, was Paulie and Zab, the battle of the borough, battle for Brooklyn. They even gave out a belt at the end. It was basically, I didn't expect Paulie to just outclass Zab after what he did in his previous fight against Garcia. And I want your opinion. It was a moment in the fight when his dad was yelling at him. It was almost like he realized, I'm not 18 anymore. How are you? It was like, it was one of those moments where he realized, I'm a grown man, but you yelled at me like I'm an 18. It was just one of those moments where it was a disconnect, and he just kind of disconnected from the fight. I did not expect Zab to fight like that.
Yeah, I mean, Zab is 36 years old now. What hasn't been said about him over the years, he's been in the boxing spotlight since he won his first world title way back in, I think it's, and I could be wrong, something like 1998 or 2000. He's been in so many ring wars, he's been knocked out before, he was a former undisputed welterweight champion, but he's got a lot of tread on his tires, is what I'm saying, on his, and it showed in that fight. He went in as the favorite because he's a bigger puncher than Paulie, and he's had the better victories in his career than Paulie has. But Paulie's a little younger. I think he's 31. He's about five, almost 6 years younger. And you saw that in the ring. He just looked like the much fresher fighter. Like you said, he gave Zab a boxing lesson, man. His movement, his footwork in the ring. In my article, I said I won't be surprised if we see him on Dancing with Stars pretty soon. Because the way he was able to move around the ring and not run, he literally just simple, subtle steps from side to side that made it very difficult for Zab to load up on his punches and connect. And you just saw Paulie give him a boxing lesson for 12 rounds. He beat him up. He shocked a lot of people in getting that victory. And he, most importantly for him, he prolonged his career because he said after he lost to Adrian Broner in June of this year at that same arena, at the Barclays Arena, Paulie considered leaving the sport. And it wasn't until Al Haymon gave him a call and told him, that he thought that he could still make some money in the sport and still win a world title that he decided to come back. And now that he's beaten Zab and, gotten his little feather in his hat, got the little King of Brooklyn title, now he's already said that he says – already he wants a rematch with Broner if Broner wins his upcoming fight, big fight this weekend. And if not, he wants another big payday. And it looks like he's probably definitely in line for that.
All right, you guys are cute. We're gonna pay some bills, and we're going to come back and talk about the big fight this weekend and get your prediction as we talk about the card and get your prediction on the big fight. This is the RSG Real Sports Guys special for boxing. We're going to pay some bills.
Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, our boxing special, getting ready for the big weekend with Adrian Broner and Madonna. We're here with Teron Briggs from boxing.com. Also, he has a blog, The Week That Was, that you definitely got to follow. Hit him up on Twitter. Teron, give your folks your Twitter handle.
Sure. It's at Teron Briggs. T-E-R-O-N is the first name. The last name is Briggs, B-R-I-G-G-S. I try to make it as simple as possible for people to remember.
You making it simple. And I'm telling y'all, folks, I got to follow this man. When you get out here, he's not going to hit you with boxing. He'll hit you with a whole bunch of stuff. He's a great follow. He's a name that you're going to continue to see really impacting the boxing game, and we need to support him as he supported us on the RSG. Now we got the big weekend.
Exactly, okay. So here we are.
Talk about the weekend. Let's talk about the card, and then let's go to the main event and your keys to victory.
Okay, great. Yep, it's the final big card of the year. It's this Saturday night on Showtime, Showtime Championship Boxing from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. And the marquee fight is the main event, and it features the WBA welterweight title at stake. The champion is someone who is unfortunately garnered more headlines for his out-of-the-ring antics than he has for his fighting skills, but he is one of the best fighters in the sport today. That's Adrian Broner, and he's going to be putting his title on the line against the tough competitor, tough former title challenger Marcos Maidana in a fight that just figures to be one of the better ones of the year because of the style matchups. Just like how we were talking before, Broner is very technical. Mm-hmm. So he's a boxer first, puncher second, but he is a puncher. He does have good he has shown himself to have good knockout power. And Maidana is a brawler. He is a face first, come forward sort of just animal in the ring. He's a guy who's never been knocked out. He has a couple losses on his record, but he is not afraid. He's not afraid of combat, and he has already said that he's going to bring whatever he has to Broner. So it's going to be it should be really good. Broner has actually not been. Broner loves to talk trash, and he actually is not talking trash for this fight because Maidana doesn't speak English. So he said that it doesn't make any sense to make fun of a guy who doesn't understand what he's saying, but Maidana knows how to fight. That's the universal language. So that figures to be a really good fight, and it's actually a big card. It's a boxing card that has four televised fights. Like I said, Broner Maidana is the main event in the undercard. Keith Thurman, the undefeated interim welterweight title holder, he's been on a showcase on Showtime recently. He is fighting. He's basically defending his title against Jesus Soto Caraz, who's a tough guy who's been around for a while. And then there are two other undercard fights that aren't really. They should be pretty good. They don't feature any big names, but they do feature some titles on the line, and they should be pretty interesting as well.
So in your mind, what are the keys to victory? In terms of the big fight with Adrian Broner and Marcos Maidana, what does Maidana have to do with Broner to win the fight?
Well, what Maidana has to do is he needs to make Adrian uncomfortable. I mean, anyone who's seen Broner fight knows that he is, in a lot of ways, a carbon copy of Floyd Mayweather with his shoulder roll technique and his ability to be relaxed and comfortable in the ring. You know, that's the key to his success. He works off his jab. He likes to stalk his opponent. He likes to be in control, but he's always composed. So that's Maidana has got to get it's got to make him uncomfortable. And his style potentially leads to someone who could do that. He throws a lot of punches. He continually comes forward. He has a great chin. So we certainly think that he should be able to take a lot of firepower that Broner can give to him. And he's got to make Broner uncomfortable and get in his face, which is going to be interesting to see whether or not he can do that. And I don't think anyone who I know who thinks Maidana has a chance thinks that he's going to win a decision. So most people seem to think that if he's going to win this fight, he's probably going to knock out, win by way of knockout or stoppage.
So, Broner, you say keep doing what he does.
Broner, keep doing what he does. Keep working off his jab. Keep boxing. Maidana's going to give him a lot of openings, like I said, because he throws so many punches, and he's not a great defensive fighter. So for Adrian, I think he's just got to be – a lot of his knockouts, he moved up in weight. He's fighting at 147 now, but he used to fight down at lightweight at 130. He compiled a lot of knockouts there. He hasn't shown that he can that he's brought that power up with him against a guy like Maidana. He might have to be content to just beat him up for 12 rounds. He might not be able to knock him out. But if he does, if he tries to go for a knockout, if he thinks, you know, that there's an opening there, that's when we could really have a good fight. Because, like I said earlier, when a fighter goes for that knockout, he opens himself up to get knocked out. So
this is what you do. This is what you do. What's your prediction?
I like Broner by decision. I like him by 12-round decision in a fight that I think early on we're going to see Maidana make him uncomfortable. I think he'll make some mid-fight adjustments. That's one thing that we've noticed in Broner is that he has done a very good job in his fights of making adjustments throughout to deal with whatever his opponent is bringing at him. And I think he'll win I wouldn't say a lopsided, but I think he'll win a very clear, decisive victory.
I'm predicting Broner will TKO in the 10th round. I think
TKO, okay.
I think people are judging too much off of Pauly, and I think Pauly is just too hard to hit. I think people are realizing he's got great defensive skills. I think a guy like Broner, in the way that I think we found with somebody like Floyd, when you have an aggressive fighter, if you think about the knockouts Floyd has had, aggressive fighter, his quickness in the way that he might counter and come with crazy angles. And I also think Broner doesn't get enough credit in terms of the body work he does with people early in the game. And I think that styles make fights, like you always said. I think having somebody come at him aggressively, I think he'll counter and catch between his speed and his power, he'll get something late. Because I think he's looking for something to put him back up on the stage and get people to realize that this power does go to the next level. And really, I think we just realized that Pauly is an elite fighter that's hard to hit. And so if somebody doesn't knock Pauly out, who's got a great chin, I think that you can't really judge. That's who people get to Pauly. So that's my thought. I'm going to throw it out there, but, you know, I could be wrong.
Yeah, no. I'm going to
hit you on Twitter. I want you to hit me back, man, on that. I'm going to say this, man. It's a pleasure. We were able to work this out and get you on with us.
Definitely. One quick thing on that card. I just wanted to add for anyone who on Showtime Extreme, one of the Showtime sister networks, they do the undercard fights. Not the there's four fights in the main event that are being televised on Showtime. But Showtime Extreme does some of the lower echelon or less high-profile fights. And in one of those fights, the former undisputed middleweight champion of the world, Jermaine Taylor, is going to be fighting.
That's right.
So,
I thought it. I was going to ask you about that.
I mean, listen, he's I for one, don't think that he should be fighting, but he has passed all of the necessary medical guidelines. In fact, he's going above and beyond that because a few years ago, he did have some issues where there was there was some blood on the brain that he unfortunately you know, he dealt with some a health scare due to fighting. He has since been clear. He took a ton of time off. He's come back. He's had a fight since he sort of left the sport a couple years ago. He didn't really look good in that. This is his first time fighting in quite some time now. I think it's almost a year. He's fighting the guy who is JC Candelio, who's an older fighter in his late 30s, hasn't been good in a while. So hopefully he's the type of fighter who can't hurt Jermaine. But I don't understand personally why Jermaine is continuing to fight when he's had these sort of health scares that he's had and some of the horrific knockouts that he suffered. But but it's his right to continue, and as long as he can pass get the medical clearance, you know, no one can stop him from fighting, and he is continuing on his quest to try to win another world title.
Well, Ben, let the folks know again where they can catch you before we let you go.
Definitely, you can catch me on boxing.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Teron Briggs, as well as also theexaminer.com.
And I tell you right now, this is a real sports guys special, boxing. Make sure you check out the fight this weekend against Madonna and Adrian Broner. It's going to be a great fight. We look forward to having you back on again, Teron, and you have a great time. I look forward to going back and forth with you on Twitter. Until next time, y'all, RSG, we'll see you next week at our regular time.